For us, after a year and a half almost of learning, we hope to finish Perek Beis. Mazel Tov. See, that's the real Mazel Tov in this year. Yes, I do have some more sheets. Oh, I thought, no, I gave them all out. Maybe there's extra. Okay, there's some extra there. Okay. We're up to the last few psukim in Perek Beis. And I'd like to do those today. There's some very interesting things, some pshat things that are interesting, and some hashkafic ideas which are very interesting, both in terms of the issues in the text or the medrash, and also even some profound meta issues. Meta both in terms, primarily in terms of a real issue which runs the gamut of all Torah learning when it comes to the Midrashim or Chazal, which is an age-old controversial issue of how literally to take Midrashim. Midrashim that are extraordinary. Sometimes they just fill in a gap in the text and they're maybe not obvious, but they're plausible. But there are many times, as we all know, when Midrashim describe situations which are fantastic in that sense of the word, and you have a tension running throughout Jewish tradition of how literally to take those and how figuratively to take those. And a classic example of that will hit us right off the bat. But just to remind ourselves where we were before 2 weeks ago. 2 weeks ago I had a wedding in New York, and then last week I was in Israel. But where we left off was a very important shiur, which we did 2 weeks ago, which was the actual second parak, chapter 2 version of Chava, of Eve's creation. Again, now is not the time. We can't review all of the time we did spend discussing the parallels and the contrasts between the first chapter and the second chapter, why there needs to be two versions, why there are differences. That's stuff that we have addressed in the past. But the basic issue of the way Chava was created, Adam going to sleep, waking up, and whoa, look who's there. Those things which we saw, some very fascinating, if you'll recall, in particular commentators at least, some very fascinating material, again, stuff that at least particularly fascinated me, the two shiurim in a row that we had, which spoke about kind of Adam's awareness. Both the Torah's sensitivity to his awareness, as well as its description of his own self-awareness, and the fact that perhaps Adam might be scared. Right? We never thought about that before, at least I never did. But he woke up, and all of a sudden there was this woman. So, of course, some of our people thought, he might have been scared, so the Torah needed to introduce us. Others suggested that perhaps he went to sleep, because he was put to sleep because it was more exciting. You see something new, it's more dramatic, it's more exciting. I had that experience, but it failed, or I tried to create that experience with my children, because now, with being the fourth year in a row that I've led this mission, so of course my kids already know that I come home bearing gifts. The reason I do that is because there's no point otherwise in coming home. And I try, as they're getting older, to make the gifts a little bit more elevated. With one of my sons, especially when he was a little bit younger, really all he wanted, he was obsessed with the idea of Israeli soldiers, which he gets a little bit from me, I have to say, they are my heroes. But it's interesting, in Israel, I got to talk to somebody about this, they don't make like toys that are like obviously Israeli soldiers. What they do sell in certain stores is very Americanized G.I. Joe figures, made in Taiwan, sold in America, and shipped to Israel. So if I buy them in Israel, I can with a straight face tell them, look, I got you an Israeli soldier.
With the
Kung Fu
grip?
Of course. But I had to make sure. So I tried to get a little bit away from that, but not entirely. So when I called my wife and said, I had the gifts, they were actually out of the house when I came home. So my mom says, hide the gifts so we can decide to give them a little bit now if they have a little bit for Hanukkah. And in fact, when the other two, my oldest daughter and my second son, they didn't even, where's the gifts? Oh, you'll get them. And one of my suitcases was missing, so I kind of told them a white lie that the toys were in the other suitcase, which they weren't. And really, they were hidden in my wife's bed. Meanwhile, the oldest son, and this is classic vintage Yaakov, for those who know him, before I knew it, I turn around, he's already running out, look, I found the presents! So he thought of it, he found it, there's a lot of talents that he invoked there. But what I was trying to accomplish was what Hashem accomplished for Adam, this great surprise which adds to the enjoyment. So there was a lot of stuff that we saw, especially with the self-awareness of Adam, very much humanizing him, which I found to be very, very fascinating. But be that as it may, that's already happened. And the end of the Perek describes some very interesting interaction between Adam and Chava, as well as we'll see, for one of the first times, where the narrator, so to speak, speaks, not necessarily describing actual dialogue taking place in the story itself. So let's take a look. We're up to Pasuk Chav Gimel, and we'll read, as is our typical style, we'll read these three psukim, these three verses, and then we'll, again, read them slowly, with an eye towards some of the issues or tensions that may arise, and then we'll go back and cherry-pick a few of the issues we want to discuss more in depth. So Pasuk 23, Chav Gimel, tells us, now after Adam has woken up, and he sees that there's this woman next to him, Vayomar Adam, and the man says, Zos Hapam, this is the time. Etzem Me'atzamai, a bone from my bones, Uvasar Mibisarai, of course, referring to the woman now, she is also flesh of my flesh. Lizos, which probably should be translated as, therefore, I would have said, although that's not literal, Yikare Isha, she should be called Isha. And what is the etymology, what is the significance of Isha? So the Torah tells us, Kimei Ish, Lukacha Zos. Isha means she comes from man. He is known as Ish, she was created from him, and therefore she is known as Isha. Any issues jump out at you now before we see the next pasuk? Any questions? Any textual issues needing explanation?
What's the Zosapan?
Good, so Zosapan is a little bit forced.
We'll
get to it. Good. But the point is, if we understand the tension in the pasuk before we look at Rashi, we appreciate Rashi more. Right? It's not obvious what Rashi says, and we'll see. It'll be very widely discussed what Rashi says. But before we'll see it, we'll get back to it. But the point is, whatever explanation you'll give, Zos Hapam, this is the time. This is the time of what? It's almost a non sequitur. The pasuk could easily have been written without it. That's good. That's point number one. Anything else? Something a little bit out of whack with the name. Because what's the parallel? Isha, and the etymology the Torah is telling us, because of Ish. But that's not what he's called. In other words, there's a different reference to him. He's not called Ish, he's called Adam. And why is he called Adam? Adam? Kimi Adama. Again, it's the same thing. In both cases, the name that the Torah is ascribing is the name that relates to the derivation, the raw material. It would be like, calling us DNA man. Like, that's my name. Why? Because I come from DNA. So Adam is from the ground, Adama. Isha is because she's from the Ish. But there is it's unequal, right? Because Ish is like the species name, and his particular name is Adam. Isha is not actually her name, or is it? What is her name? Right? And have we seen Chava yet? The name Chava is fascinating. It's like, here's where the drama of, the surprise, The Torah is like holding, and I just keep one card still on the deck, and waiting to, we still don't have the name Chava yet. So it's interesting that, even though on the one hand it makes sense, there is a parallel between Adam and Isha, because in both cases they're talking about where the particular person came from, but at the same time there is a little bit of an inconsistency, which when we'll get to Chava's name, maybe we'll try to address that, but it is just worth noting. I don't have more to say on it other than to point it out to you. We'll see one of the Mefarshim who do point this out, and that is that, again, for some reason, and I'm not sure I know it yet, the Torah is going out of its way to hold back Chava's name, because we already know Adam and Ish, but we yet don't know Chava.
In this regard, it's most interesting. I was just thinking, I'll look at a couple instances back previously, and whenever it refers to Adam, it's Ha-Adam,
right.
Not Adam. Adam
right.
would mean
right.
a
right.
but Ha-Adam, the...
Right, okay, that's good. So in that sense,
very
maybe it is... Okay, good.
I mean, that seems to coincide.
Good. Okay, that helps a little bit. That does help. I appreciate that. Okay, good. Let's move on now to Pasuk of Dalit. And here is a very interesting Pasuk. Famous Pasuk, right? This is like, the only thing you're missing from the Sheva Brachos is the Chasan HaKala, but this is, we're in Sheva Bracha Central now, and I will resist not to give over all the Sheva Brachos of Torah, but if you have any good ones, I'm constantly being asked to speak, so my wife has a little bit of it. She gives me a look when she's heard a drusher before, and the look is getting more and more withering. So other people seem to still appreciate the Torah. Right? My wife, when people invite us, I often say, my wife can't come, we have four little kids, but now you know the real reason why I don't want her to come. Because even if I can get away with giving a Torah to somebody else, she's an old Torah. She is, I have two favorites at Shavu Brachos, she knows them both. And she will be in the car, and she'll go, "You have a car?" And I'll say, "Yeah." She goes, "Okay, but it's not that or that, right?" I'm like, come on. They never heard it before. It's new to them. Okay, anyway. So what is this famous pasuk? Pasuk Chav Daled, 24. Al-Kain, and therefore because of what? We don't know. Al-Kain, and therefore, Yazav Ish, es Aviv, es Imo, a man should leave the house of his father and his mother, the Dovak, the Ishto, and should cling or cleave with his wife, the Hayul of Asar Echad, and they should be one flesh. So, leave aside the details. What is the biggest issue with this pasuk?
Oh,
it totally it doesn't fit, right? It doesn't fit at all. It doesn't fit at all. Who's talking? Who's talking? Did Adam say this? Oh, we're reading text now. Don't use Rashi as a crutch. We're reading text.
The other question is, Rabbi, why? I've always had this problem. Why did it say Akeyazov Ishes? It's also. I mean,
what about the woman?
Yeah, what about the woman?
Right, go ahead.
I mean, she's
leaving. That's Sheva Brachos Torah. We're not. That's Sheva Brachos Torah.
That's
a good question. I'm not dismissing it. That's not a dismissive.
That's always a question.
That's not a dismissive response.
It's,
yeah, I mean, she's leaving her father and mother, man.
Right. Apparently, the Torah was aware of a concept known as Mama's Boy. Right. This is it. And I want you to know, I know it socially, and I certainly have been aware of it a little bit a few times rabbinically, when you have, you know, mothers who are not willing to let go. For some reason, the fathers don't have that problem. The mothers of young men who get married, it's a famous, famous problem. And it's interesting that the Torah was not, or should say, unsurprisingly, I don't mean it always happens, but it happens more often than in other relationships. Okay, all the women are getting nervous. Did they do this with their son? They won't do this with their son. They don't have a son. Okay.
Isn't it misplaced?
Totally. Yes, yes.
There's no mother and there's no father.
Correct. Good. It doesn't fit at all. Exactly. That's exactly the point I want to bring out. It doesn't fit at all. Right? There is no mother. There is no father. Who's talking? What's it got to do with the narrative? All true.
I think it's a beautiful statement in terms of when one marries, you join again where you were from before.
Correct.
The beginning.
Yeah, that's the thing. That's why I'm trying to distinguish between the point that can or needs to be made in the pasuk, as I say, in isolation, which is what I'm referring to as the Sheva Brachos Dvar Torahs, and then I'm speaking about it now as a pasuk at the end of Perek Beis of Bereishis. Why is it here? It does not seem to fit. It does not seem to fit. But again, it's a beautiful in another context. The question is, why is it here? Okay, so we'll see. Again, it doesn't fit in the sense of, doesn't fit in a literal sense, I think.
It fits in the sense of the previous pasuk, etzem me'atzonai v'basam mibsari. In other words, we are one.
Correct.
We were created
Listen,
as one.
When I say that it doesn't fit, I don't mean that we were in the middle of talking about the halacha of kashrus, and all of a sudden, whoa! The point is, we have a story until now, and this is not part of the story. This is a comment on the story, perhaps, but it's not part of the story. And, to make matters, or to finish that point, let's look at the final pasuk. Right, the final pasuk goes back to the story. Right, even if it was the last pasuk, it would make more sense than this pasuk.
Okay.
And I'm not saying I will have a good answer for this, I have to tell you. But the Torah seamlessly weaves, it's like, you know, slaloming. In the story, take a break for one pasuk, okay, out of the story, whoop, back to the pasuk, and what is that final pasuk of Perek Beis? Again, all these are well-known pasukim. You shnehem arumim, they were both naked. Ha'adam v'ishto, the man, again, Harry, good point, v'ishto and his wife, now she is defined by the relationship, v'lo yisboshashu, which is translated typically to mean they were not embarrassed. Embarrassed about being married? No, not. They were not embarrassed about being, they were not embarrassed about being unclothed. Okay, now let's, I think we brought up a little bit of the issues again in the Torah, in the text, and what I would like to do, especially for the first point, the first point we mentioned, which is Gene, I think, was going to say it. What is the Al-Kain? Where does that come from? If you take, the Zos HaPam in Pasuk Chav Gimel, again, out of nowhere, Adam wakes up, he has his new wife, and Zos HaPam, this is the time, which again, the Pasuk does not need it at all. Just saying, Etzem Etzmai, right, this new creature, this person, this woman next to me, she is not just somebody, she's from me, she's from my flesh and bones. What is the Zos HaPam? So what I'd like to do is to focus. There are other mafarshim out there, but the truth is that this pasuk, and you do have this every now and then, most of the subsequent, so to speak, intellectual energy, or at least a lot of it, throughout our history, has been focused not so much on independent pshatim of the pasuk, but on focusing on Rashi's pshat. And the truth is, Rashi does not give an independent pshat. Rashi, as he so often does, is actually citing a chazal. In this case, not from a medrash, but from a gemara itself. And before we see the Rashi inside, let's take a look at the primary texts, and then we'll see the Rashi in our chumash. So take a look at the beginning of your source sheet. It's a 1-2-line gemara. It's a gemara from Maseches Yevamos. Omer Rebbe Lazar. Rebbe Lazar says, "My dichtiv, that which is written, Zos Hapam, this is the time, Etzem Yatzamay, Basri Psarai, as we've seen, the flesh of my flesh and the bone of my bones, what is that all about?" Malamed, says the Gemara, a shocking statement. Shabba Adam, I'll call Behema Vachaya. Adam was intimate with all animals and all creatures. Lo niskara daito. Literally, he was not cooled off, meaning he did not find satisfaction from any of those unions. Ad Shabbat Al Chava. Until, apparently, again, it's not at all indicated in the text, and we'll see in Mefarish in a moment who makes that point, but this Chazal assumes a lot of things that aren't in the text. Number one, Adam's intimacy with the other animals, and also not in the text, not to be overlooked, the Gemara assumes at the end, and you kind of could lose sight of it because of the shocking beginning of the Gemara, but the Gemara also assumes that it's being hinted at here that there was a sexual union already between Adam and Chava, which you don't get. No one raised that point when we read the Chumash. But Chazal make both points. Now, what they don't tell us is where do you get. It's like one thing to say Adam was with the animals. I mean, it's hard enough to say, but like, you wouldn't probably say it unless you have to. Like, where did the Chazal get it from? They just say it. Rabbi Elazar says it. So Rashi tells us, look at the Rashi. This is the Rashi now on the Gemara. Not the Rashi on the Chumash, but again, we'll see in a moment that they're parallel. I'm just giving you the original sources. Zos hapam. This is the time. The implicit question is, of what? What do we care about? So says Rashi, it's to contrast with another time. Mechlal de pa'amim acherim, shimesh v'lo alo b'dayto. Again, so you have to work with two axioms, and this is where potentially this Maimar Chazal would be vulnerable. Number one is there's an axiom that this is referring to physical sexual union. And v'zo sapam, and this is the time. So, you know, this is, you know, it's like, if you will, lahavdil, you know, a couple, you know, goes on their honeymoon, and then years later, they think, well, you know, this was the time, you know, they're looking at the picture album, you know, you're telling the kids, this is the time we went to the Eiffel Tower, and this is the time we saw the Tower of London, and this is the time... Yeah, so this is the time contrasts whatever we're talking about now with other things. You know, now I'm here. This time I went there. So the Gemara seems to understand that the Pasuk is talking about a form of a relationship to Adam and Chava. This is the time implied that it's different than something else that existed. And again, with like leaps and bounds, the Gemara jumps to perhaps the most shocking thing you can imagine, that Adam was already intimate with all the animals who we already have learned about. Adam had a relationship with. We never thought of this kind of relationship, right? Because what did the Torah tell us? That all the animals came by and Adam named them. So apparently, according to this opinion of Chazal, if we take it literally, more than just naming took place. And Zosapam, there's the drama. Again, we mentioned, again, it adds, in a sense, a dynamic to what we saw in previous weeks. So we spoke about Adam being lonely, right? And we mentioned, and I can't remember who made this point, but we mentioned the fact that there was, seemed to have been an interruption. The Torah talks about Adam's creation, and Adam's lonely, and then the Torah goes out of its way to name the animals, and then comes back to creation of Chava. Right? So we mentioned at the time, even without this, we said perhaps because he saw what else was around him, and he realized that he was incompatible with any of the other animals, therefore he became lonely, and therefore the need for Chava. This fits into that. It just adds a much deeper dimension to it. Right, Adam didn't just look around and say, I can't talk philosophy with the cow, and I can't, you know, discuss the sports section with the horse, and, you know, all these things that I want to have, you know, he'll find out when he gets married that he can't do that with his wife either. But, okay, you know, every newlywed's allowed their dreams. Right? So, that's what we thought. According to this Maimar Chazal, it doesn't change the general narrative, but it obviously adds something very different to it. I would say that potentially there would be, leave aside the fact that it's not necessarily derived from the text, but well, number one is I guess that's the first question, which is the axiom that this whole matter starts on is to assume that the Torah is referring to a physical relationship between Adam and Chava. Again, eventually we know that they have one. The Torah talks about it in the fourth parak, and we know they have children. So you know, we're all grown ups here. That does, you know, the Torah itself speaks as a grown up, if you will. So that, but there's no indication from the text that it happened now. But once the Torah, once the Chazal have that assumption, then, which is number one, big hop, that leads to a skip, and then a jump, which is where they get to the animal part. So the first question is, why do they make the first hop to begin with? Why assume that what's being described here between Adam and Chava is anything more than waking up and saying, "Hi, Shalom Aleichem, I'm Adam, what's your name?" You know, that's all we thought happened. That's number one. But beyond that, let's assume that we take Chazal as a given. What are the two, I would say, probably two problems one could have with this? They're very similar. I hope I'm not stretching this one too. You know, I hereby designate you Mefarish. You're a biblical commentator. You see this text, you see this Medrash, take a look, just by the way, I almost forgot to do so, just, why did I bring this all in? Because Rashi does. Look at Rashi on our Pasuk. Right? I wonder, by the way, since it's been a long time, but did the school skip this with little kids? I guess, right? I guess they don't do Rashi when the kids are that young. Right, but how did the Rashi's that are like Alech Lecha? I have to skip other Rashi's, I guess. But okay, it's just interesting. You know, you don't get this when you're a kid. Okay, What does Rashi say? Again, we just saw it, but let's see it inside the Chumash. 23. Right, it's really here. I didn't make it up. It's in the stone Chumash. He was intimate with every animal and every species and beast. Lonis kara daita. His mind was not at ease or cooled. Behem through them. And therefore, he needed a kava. Okay? And apparently that there was a satisfaction there. So, two problems with this. If one, or what do you think it's referring to?
I said he approached each animal.
Ba, take a look at the beginning of Perek Dalet. What does Perek Dalet, Pasuk Dalet say? Adam yoda es chava ishto. And what does yoda mean there? That's referring to a physical or sexual intimacy. So the assumption is that that's the words that. Oh, okay, fair enough. Okay, this is, what can I tell you? This is what, I haven't seen a single commentator who understood the Gemara differently, or Rashi differently.
I mean, the connotation is...
Well, I take that back. Rashi, so you're, okay, one second. You might have been too subtle for me. You're too smart for me. One second. So let's just step back quickly. No, I don't mean that facetiously. I think I missed what you were trying to say.
Huh.
Okay. By the way, I saw your in-laws in Israel. They were at the convention. Anyway. And your daughter, right? I'm still jet lagged. You forgive me with the jet lag. Okay. Yeah. I did see daughter. She looks great. Okay. And your in-law is also great. I think perhaps what you're getting at is, the first thing is, do you have, again, the Gemara is the Gemara. So for now, we're not questioning that per se, but how do you understand the Gemara? Right? So Rashi does use a word which seems to make his meaning unambiguous, right? Shimesh is a sexual adjective, that verb. That's what that means. Mishamish mitasa, that's a term we have in Chazal and in Mefarshim. So, but the question, I think, maybe this is what you're getting at. So, but that word wasn't in the Gemara, and Yada correctly pointed out, I stand corrected, that's also not in the Gemara. So what might it have meant, Naomi?
Well, I thought he might have approached each with the hopes that maybe that was his mate, but not necessarily...
Good. Okay, very good. So the first point... which is, I guess, if you will, even reading, you know, shot in the Medrash, did you have to make that jump? Good, that was actually the first basic thing I was looking for. And a second one, think more just abstractly, more philosophically, more morally. All of you are thinking this, so just say what you're thinking. I'll give you, you can say it with no syllables. Or maybe is that one syllable talking to me? Ugh! Could it be? Adam? Ugh! It's disgusting! How can you say such a thing? Is that what you are thinking? Okay, don't admit it if you weren't. Yes?
Okay, when Hashem created the creatures, all the people, does it say anything about how he created them both at the same time?
You mean the animals before him?
Yes. Or were they both male and female created at the same time? Or were they also...
The original ones did not procreate. I mean, the original male and female elephants...
Animals.
They were created... So the original ones were created from whether it was... We saw some creatures were created from the ground, some creatures were created from the water. We saw that perhaps the fish were created from a combination.
But the male and female...
The first species, Dor Rishon, I believe was created from the natural material, the ground or the water.
No, the question is, were they created?
So this time... At this time, you know, this first woman was created from my flesh, from my body.
So you want to give an alternative shot, not the Gemara's.
Right.
Okay, so it's different than Naomi's, but it's similar in the sense that you could read this differently. Again, that's basically the first basic question on this Rashi or this Chazal is, did you really have to say that? I mean, even in terms of shot or the puzzle, shot of the Gemara, which I think was Naomi's point. But as I said, the number two point, which is just, you know, let's... Forget all, you know, pretenses of sophistication. Just, ugh. Like, you know, if it was black and white on the Chumash, I mean, you know, the Chumash does describe all sorts of things which are unpleasant. That's part of the beauty, frankly, of the Chumash. It's very real. But, okay, so then we have to deal with unpleasantries. But why would you imagine such a thing that's so depraved? Of all things, Adam. I mean, I wouldn't want to say that about the worst person in the world, let alone Adam. So, these two points are essentially made by the different Mefarshim. And I say the third point, which is really the first one, which I want to get to now, which is the least powerful, because again, you can lose sight of it because we're so like jarred by the main issue, which is again, I hope I want you to see this. I'm repeating this now, I think, for the third time, but because I want to make sure you see this. Even if we take the Gemara at face value, the what they call the hermeneutic in fancy English, or the drush, what are the mechanics of the drusha? So the mechanics of the drusha are two assumptions, but the first one is the critical one, or else you don't get off the ground, which is that what is being implied here, the Gemara says, or the Gemara implies, it's very subtle, the Gemara implies that what was being implied in the text was sexual relationship between Adam and Chava. If you don't say that, then there's no reason to assume that Zosapam relates to anything similar. Once you say that Adam and Chava, then, whoa, Zosapam, this was a particularly satisfactory, satisfying intimate union, as opposed to Zosapam. This was the one, Zosapam, as opposed to the other ones, which were not. Then you can, but you don't get up. So that first point, which is in a certain sense almost lost, is the one that is originally attacked but defended by the Mizrahi. If you take a look at the third source on your sheet, Rabbi Eliezer Mizrahi, one of the classic supra commentaries on Rashi, and the whole first part of the shir now, and the first part, the rest of the sources on this side of the sheet, are all what I call, and we've spoken about this in the past, supra commentaries, in that they're not commenting on the Chumash, they're actually commenting on Rashi's comment on the Chumash, right? They turn Rashi into a primary text. So the Mizrahi, who's one of the earliest, maybe the earliest to do it, he himself was a Rishon, the Mizrahi points out the first issue, which again, before you get to the shocking part of the Medrash, just the assumption that the Medrash is making about Adam and Chava here is not borne out in the text. Says Mizrahi. Where did the Gemara get the assumption that Adam and Chava had that kind of relationship at this point? In Parak Dalet they have it. But who said they have it already in Parak Beis? So he explains that Rashi assumed it, Chazal assumed it, and he defends it. Why? Kaven de babasta zugo kamairi hainu tashmish. Since we are talking about his wife, his helpmate, right? That's obviously a signature component of marriage. V'hochi kamar, and this is what it means to say. Zos hapam, this time, haisa bazugi, etzem zugai, etzeme atzemai. I'm with my mashert, if you will, etzeme atzemai, from my own flesh and bones. Kodem lekein, before that, haisa mishar habali achayim, she'enem etzeme atzemai. I was with these other animals who aren't made up of the same flesh and bones as me. Mechalal, that implies that he was intimate with them. In other words, which is another way of saying, says the Mizrahi, how else would he have known? One thing you do have in the text, right? This is not a Medrash, right? Again, this is bolstering the Medrash. The text itself says the Adam declared that Chava is uniquely my flesh and bones. In essence, says the Mizrahi, how did Adam know? You need to investigate a little bit. And apparently, the assumption is just looking, even with a magnifying glass, wouldn't have been enough. They needed to have been intimate so that he could see or feel that the flesh and bones are different. There's a different consistency. There's a different, whatever, I don't know what adjectives to use. But there's something, how else would he have known, says the Mizrahi. So that's the assumption that Rashi and / Chazal are making, that it must have been, if you want to make such a, it's one thing to say, she's wonderful, she's nice, we're compatible. But to say, we really are of one flesh, we really were created. So you got to be intimate with someone to know that. That's an intimate statement. So that's how we know he was intimate with Chava. And once he was intimate with Chava, then the only way he could contrast her with the other animals is if he had also been intimate with them. The other thing he points out, which is deflates it a little bit, Inami, his second answer, Ein Zel Remez Bamla. Enchanami, the truth is, you're right, it's a little bit out of order. The Torah is not actually telling us about Adam and Chava now. They're hinting at what happened later in Perek Dalid. And again, Ikra Adavra Ein Element Hava Adam Yodas Chava Yishto. Come on. It's only actually in Pardal that it actually happens. The Torah, which is, Chazal know about it, so they're hinting at it with this pasuk. So that's, that's like kind of the housekeeping of this pasuk, which is we got to get that out of the way, which is we have to realize, again, the jump that Chazal make, which is that Chava and Adam had a certain kind of relationship, and I think we need a little bit of help from the Mizrahi to understand why they even made that jump. Once we made that jump, some of us might have said, that's a big enough jump, Chazal, maybe take a break, but Chazal was, so to speak, emboldened by the first jump, and they take a huge jump. Once they've taken their first one, that's now they have a leap, and they talk about Adam's relationship with the animals. And now we have two basic problems with that. The one that was more or less described here, which is, couldn't you read the pasuk differently? Or, as Naomi said, could you read the Gemara differently? Which I think is a very good point. And then we have my second profound and articulate explanation question of, ugh. So let's see in a moment. These two issues are going to lead to other commentators struggling to understand, and it's, you'll see there'll be some confusion. Are they explaining Rashi? Are they explaining the Gemara? And perhaps you can distinguish. But we will see, and it will understand, I think, now that we've really worked this over, we'll appreciate the next two or three sources we're going to see. And also, in the back of your mind, keep cognizant of the meta issue, which I mentioned at the opening of this year, which is this meta issue, which is a massive, massive issue, which is, again, to what extent. Let's assume that the Chazal really meant it. So now you and I are here in 2006. Maybe it would have been 1496. We're reading the Medrash. Are we as religious Jews really obligated to take such thing literally? Isn't it possible that the Medrash just means it's figuratively? Or is that itself heresy? Oh, Chassid Shalom, how could you not take Chazal literally? How could you not take it seriously? That's an old question. And again, there's a myriad of battle fronts for that question. And so it happens, we have one right here. And you can understand why someone, you know, in good faith, might be a little bit uncomfortable taking this literally. Yes?
The mechanics of jumping to a sexual union, though, is really implied in the text.
Because?
Because the expression of via is there all the time. By via el ha'ela.
Right.
That already has a sexual context to it.
Fair enough.
And in fact, if you want to take it to the next level, theoretically, you could say this whole idea of a union with the animals
is already implied earlier.
Is implied earlier, and this is really a leap.
Yeah, because Chazal don't say what you're about to say.
I know.
You're emboldened. Ethan's emboldened.
Well, whatever.
Right. Okay.
And that's
so,
all the animals. So, yeah.
You don't have to understand
it
that way.
You can say, yes, to bring them all to be named.
Right.
Or, but again, the connotation
okay.
of that language is...
It's supportive of Chazal. Let's put it that way. Yes.
Right, is there any of the Mefarshim comment on the words etzemeatzemai b'sarabotum?
Yeah. What do you mean?
Why would Adam all of a sudden, use these two? What is, we're talking about obviously a physical relationship. I mean, is there any significance? He said etzemeatzemai, okay? Because he took the Selah, or whatever it means. But why in a sense?
I'm not sure.
Because you would know that neither Basar B'Bisarai or etzemeatzemai.
Why both, you're asking.
Yeah, but why?
I don't know.
I thought there may be some.
Yeah. Just because I don't know it doesn't mean it's not there. Homer carry.
The comment that was made earlier, well, I think it's a beautiful comment in terms of what Adam is saying is that heretofore all animals were created male and female at the same time, so on and so forth. This time, Zos Hapam, which is what I think was being said.
Yes.
Zos Hapam is being created one unit
separate
from another,
yes,
which certainly
is absolutely
it,
unique,
which avoids the yech and everything
correct,
else.
Correct, correct. So again, so two points, which I think is number one is yes, this is what we spoke about 2 weeks ago. I can't remember now whoever it was who made the point that this is deliberate because this creates the drama, the excitement for Adam. If you just are created and Chava's there already, so hopefully you like her, hopefully she likes him, but you're not the wow. You know, the fact that he was lonely and then got her, he'll appreciate her more. Right? You'll remember that there was also a medrash that said we wanted him to ask for her so that
right.
when he would complain later, Hashem would say, you know, right? The parenting 101. Parenting 101, right? So that's all true. The one thing it doesn't address is the medrash. In other words, that's an alternative to the medrash. What admittedly, what we're focusing on now is if you assume the medrash, which Rashi does, and all the commentators on Rashi do, are you forced to reach the conclusion that Rashi seems to, which is to take it very literally, and then, you know, mate, listen, we'll all go home and go to sleep tonight, and we'll all wake up tomorrow saying believing Jews, even if we take the message literally. I don't exaggerate it. On the other hand, you know, I'm not sure if my life was made any better before I learned this, you know, after I learned this better. You know, is it really, you know, it's worthy of spending a few minutes on, I think. What do you understand from such a medrash? You know, you don't get something like this every day. You don't get it in Rashi on the Chumash. It's not like this is like hidden away like Shir Shirim. This is right there. So, and again, it's not just that it's so anathema to us. It's anathema to the Torah. And the Torah singles this out as one of the particular depravities. So the thought of, you know, it's one thing, again, another meta issue, you know, is how perfect were the biblical forefathers? How perfect were the Avos or the Imahos? And that's an interesting question in its own right. Can we criticize them? Were they human? Did they have faults? But it's one thing to say, you know, like the Ramban sometimes does, that, you know, Avram made a mistake, or Hirsch says that Yaakov made a mistake parenting. But there's a huge jump between that and bestiality. Right? So let's see a little bit of these Mefarshim. So the Maharal is one of the first who addresses this. And again, the Maharal in the classical commentary, Gur Aryeh, is a commentary on Rashi. And the Maharal, as he so often does, speaks in a lot of philosophical, deep remuzim. fact, we have the Machon Yerushalayim Hartman edition of the Maral here. I don't have it at home, so I haven't looked at it. In fact, he was at OU Convention too. I spent Shabbos with him and heard two shiurim from Rabbi Hartman, who has been a guest in our shul in the Baltimore past. Huge scholar of many things, in particular the Maral. So this is one of those moments where I really wish I had Rabbi Hartman here, because I don't understand all of the details of the Maral, but I think we can get his gist. Basically, if you take a look at the Maral, he asks the question in a very narrow sense. And I'm going to paraphrase it just for the sake of time. I don't want to run out of time. He asks the question very simply, which is, how could this be? It's Osir. It's forbidden. How could you say that about Adam? It's Osir. And you'll tell me, well, maybe he didn't know it was Osir. The Gemara, he quotes it, the Gemara Sanhedrin, learns that there's a halacha of arayos, illicit sexual unions, even for non-Jews, from the psukim here. The Gemara in Sanhedrin learns from the psukim of Adam and the animals in the garden. It is the source. It's the next pasuk. Al-Kain is the source in the Gemara in Sanhedrin that prohibits this kind of a behavior. Duh. So of course Adam knew about it. Of course it's on the books. If it's elicited, it's usher. How could you say, says the Maral, that Adam did that? He asks the question very narrowly, but it's still a profound and difficult question. How could it be? So he discusses in all sorts of philosophical terminology, which I'm not sure I understand, other than basically his answer is Naomi's answer. It doesn't mean it literally. Do not take the Mishnah. And he accepts the Chazal. He just says you can't understand it the way we have heretofore. It's not meant to be literally. I'll just read you the two lines that I've underlined, two parts I've underlined. He says, the Hitchabrut, Hatsura lo nikravia. In other words, there was some union. He talks about, again, these are classic Maral terms, Tzura and Chomer, which I don't really understand. But form and matter, and whatever, he speaks rather philosophically and Aristotelian, and he was a complicated guy, the Maral. His writings is very difficult. But basically, he's describing that there was some sort of a union in the sense of Adam measuring, are these people matim for me? Is this a shidduch? Is this my basheret? But he said it does not mean it literally or physically. Lo nikrabia. An obvious typo there in the next sentence. And then he concludes the second part I have underlined, Ki ein ha'adam tzurim yuchedis b'shlemus rak li'ishto. And again, he therefore denies, as we've seen, I think you now appreciate this more than if we just seen the Maral straight, once you say that, then the whole domino falls, right? Because there's two dominoes, two pieces to the domino set here. Number one is what Adam did with the animals, and number two is that the linchpin is what it assumes Adam did with Chava. Says the Maral, it doesn't mean that he was physically intimate with Chava now either. But he measured, so to speak, the tzuras, and he saw that this is the same form. This is my destined, my fated one, this woman. The species of woman, for me, the species of man. As opposed to the previous ones. But he goes out of his way, even though we don't understand all the language, but he's really one of the earliest who says, that's his first way of dealing with it. You don't have to have any ugh problems, because it didn't mean it. We accept the medrash. Of course we accept the medrash. We have to understand what it means. We can't understand it like simpletons. The medrash is describing something deeper. The Levush Ha'oro, which is again one of the famous commentators, he's a Shulchan Aruch, big halachist, and also a commentator on Rashi. All of his Perushim are known with the first term Levush, and then they have a lot of second terms for all those different books. So here's a lengthy piece, we don't have time to read it all, but he also is bothered by this, and he asks his question more broadly than the Maharal. He actually, I don't know the exact dates, he overlapped it all with him or he lived after him, but he's aware of the Maharal because he quotes it. And he basically makes the point that, like, as powerful as the Maral's question is, it's, like, not powerful enough. Because he says it's not just the narrow usser, and if it would be mutter, it's okay. Because what do we still have left? My profound question. And who's my bakar, right? The Levush. Take a look. So he says, Ubavadai, in the opening line. Chalila, la'odam, tzir kapo yisbara Hashem, he's God's handiwork. Shnibber b'tzelem Elokim, created in the image of God. She yitma atzmo, b'zeh she yirba, shum chayo, b'hemo b'chol, chalila. Heaven forbid, God forbid to say that Adam, God's handiwork, in the image of God, that he debased himself with such behavior, it's impossible. And then he has the second line. V'lav mitam shekosov hagurariye. Forget the technical, narrow, legalistic, complaint of the Maral. Ela mitam atumush amarnu, chalila. It's contaminating. It's disgusting. So here he says powerfully, this is disgusting. It's ugh, says the Levush. Just logically, You don't need a Torah. You don't need a halacha. You don't need a divine will. What do we call this in philosophy? Natural law. Is it inherent in the fiber of humanity that this is repulsive? This is disgusting. And therefore, how could it be that we assume Adam did it? So he answers, again, a little bit more prosaically, but again, in the same general vein of the Maral, it doesn't mean it. It's figurative. He was thinking about what is the nature, what is the essence of each animal? Is it compatible with me? Will this be my one? Will this be my, you know, it's like the old, you know, with the sunflowers, you know, I love him, I love him not, I love, right? Is this my, is it the elephant's for me or he's not? Like, she, you know, he thought about it. Okay, that's not crazy. How else would he know, right? He's an open-minded person. He went through them all and then he realized that they weren't for him. And then, in that vein, he comes back to the language of the Medrash, skip to right, underline, after going through all the animals and considering them, lo niskarat daita usachloban, he was not appeased, meaning he didn't find any mate. Kolomar, ra, v'hisig, v'haven, v'yada, that's a lot of adjectives. He saw, he understood, he appreciated, he apprehended, he understood, sh'ein v'tev v'shem echad mehem sh'tuchol his'aber mimenu. And here he does speak a little bit more narrowly, he says, he understood that his mission is to procreate, Kivshuha, we've seen that, Limlos Ares. And obviously he says there's no way he could procreate with these other species. Archehuva lo chava until he sees chava. Haven besichlo shizos he. Shu'ilis abra mimenu. And only is she going to be compatible with him and they can procreate together. Only then is he satisfied. Besichlo of Amr zos yaisha. Asherokhiya Hashem letivi. This is how Hashem prepared for my nature. Zos hapam. This is what it means. Abalze haya below bia befoal. But God forbid, heaven forfend, there was no actual physical union, not with Chava, which wouldn't have been inappropriate, it just didn't happen, but it also never happened in an inappropriate way with the animals. Lo b'behemos v'chayos, v'gam lo b'chava. Rock, what is the Torah referring, what is the Chazal referring to? And here he kind of finishes with a flourish. Rock the sichlo hazach v'hatahor. Adam was considering it with his very pure and elevated mind. V'kach karala isha miyad. And therefore, he appreciated her connection to him, her intimate commonality with him, and gave her the name Isha that implied the union, even before there was union, because he had that superpower to discern the essence, which we already saw with the animals, which is how he named them. He could review it again, so not none of them for me. Chava, that's for me. Or as I tried to say in the title, he met his Bashet. Add the R. Okay. There is one Mefarish, though, one Mefarish worth noting, who rejects all of this. He says, guys, we gotta be frum. He doesn't say that. How dare you? We have to take Rashi and the Medrash at its word literally. It is known as the Divrei David. It's one of the later of the super commentaries. It is written by the Taz. The Taz, or David HaLevi, is more well known for his work on the Shulchan Aruch, his legal commentary, which is known by the acronym Tes Zayin, Taz, which itself is an acronym for the words Turei Zahav. But he's most well known for that, but he also wrote a book called Divrei David, which is a commentary on Rashi. And he understands, he's aware of the earlier people who are taking this figurative approach, and he says, how can he say such a thing? And he points out, I think, not unpersuasively, that while the Gemara is open to this interpretation, Rashi, by going out of his way to use the word shimesh, it's hard to, if you will, force these figurative readings into Rashi. The Gemara, you could see it, as Naomi mentioned before. Right? There's no verb of sexual connotation in the Gemara. But Rashi is a little bit more limiting, and the Taz makes that point. So therefore, what do? I take the Maral's legalistic question. He addresses both. It's a very important piece, this Taz. So the legalistic question, didn't we say the Gemara says bestiality is also even for non-Jews, and it comes from this story? Yes, but which pasuk does it come from? What did I allude to before? What does he tell you? The next pasuk! So again, it's not like years away. But, you know, like a kid, you know, looking at his principal or looking at his parents, 1 second before I was warned is still 1 second before I was warned. If you didn't tell me I can't do it, then how was I supposed to know? Says the Taz, it's true that Adam, and therefore all future humans, including non-Jews, are prohibited in this behavior. But only once there is a prohibition. When did that prohibition kick in, says the Taz, Zivri David, all the same person, only once he was intimate with Chava. But until then, why should, you know, once there was the perfect union of man and female, so then anything else is prohibited. But until then, how is he supposed to know? And what could be wrong with it? And therefore, says the Taz, yes, he, literally, he was physically intimate with animals, And technically speaking, legalistically, there was no problem with it then. If he would do it again, that'd be terrible, but he didn't. And then take a look at the end of it, where he asks the second question, three lines up from the bottom, in the middle, the uch question, Beishehikshu eich lo nimas b'bias behema v'chaya, how could he not have been revolted? You know, maybe he tried it once, you know, but to keep on doing it with all the animals, it's disgusting. Ugh! So, ain lekasha, says the Taz, you know, get a grip, you know, sophisticated 2006 man. Timichila, havukal b'yos naim. This is a different world in the Garden of Eden. When they were all created, these animals were not like animals that we necessarily see now. They were all more elevated, more beautiful. Only at some point later, achachach nimasu. Right, we have a prime example of that, which we'll start learning Mirtz Hashem next week in the third chapter, the story of the snake. Right, there's no question that the story of the snake, the way it's described in the Torah, is very different than snakes that we know. And the Torah itself describes the fact that snakes were changed. Says the Taz, and to me, again, as I said many times in the 2 years we've been learning together, a lot of this stuff is new for me too. So we'll have to wait and see if there's any indication. But off the top of my head, tell me if I'm wrong, I don't know if anyone else who says this or if there's any other source for this. But says the Taz, what we know, and this I'm not debating, of course, that there was some kind of transformation with the snake. Hu hadin so tu b'shar brios. He says it happened to all the animals. Not exactly the same way, not necessarily as a punishment per se. The snake was one who was punished. But he assumes, and again, I admit, I don't know this other than this one source. So we'll keep our eyes open and our ears to the ground and our detective senses honed from mafarshim or indications in the text or chazal as we go on to the next chapter, please God. But as far as I know at this point, this is the first I had heard of it. He says there was a transformation of all animals. That originally they were created with God's word and nothing could have been disgusting if it's created directly by God. And only at some point later in world history, again, a long time ago perhaps, but not initially. And therefore, even though they weren't the same creature as Adam, it wasn't a repulsive thing. It seems to me, again, just as a broad mushel, which I'm guessing, it sounds like to me he's saying, while it's true that, you know, someone's white-skinned and black-skinned look different, but they're essentially both human beings, you know, it's not so common, but there's plenty of white and black people who fall in love and there's nothing wrong with that. Or somebody who's Hispanic and someone who's Asian, you know, they're different, but they're essentially the same. So, of course, even at the time, the animals are different than Adam, but they're basically not that different. Now it's true, of course they're different, but he says that happened at some point, sometime later in history. And therefore, there's no ugh problem. And even though there would have been a technical problem, he says, yeah, but Adam just got in the door, so to speak, because he was with the animals before the technical prohibition kicked in. And just to finish this thread of the shir, I have a few minutes to try to finish the other sources. The last point, just to show you, I was, you know, this is like my teaser, like, you know, the opening of the news, you know, they tell you something to watch for, and then they wait 25 minutes to tell you about it. I told you right at the beginning, and now, just to show you, even though it's obvious, but it's explicit here in the Taz for the first one, how does he finish his little Dvar Torah? It's all good points, but he's basically telling you, I started at the end, and he knew what he wanted to accomplish, and he working backwards. What was his stated goal, his admitted bias? We got to take it literally. Chazal said it. Who are we to start playing games? So once you work with that axiom, working backwards, he answers the questions. And, you know, I'm not necessarily persuaded, but it's an ingenious piece in my opinion. But he puts his cards on the table. I give him credit for that. He tells you, what is his motivating factor? You can't play around with the words of Chazal. If they said it, they meant it. Whereas, even though they don't explicitly admit it, but it's obvious that the Maharal and the Mizrahi and perhaps others are not playing fast and loose, God forbid, but they're suggesting, either because of philosophical problems or technical legalistic problems like Maharal, that you cannot take this medrash literally. It must be taken figuratively. And as I said, this, I'm happy to share this with you and see it with you, because it gives us a window, but you have to know, as you probably already do, and I've mentioned it, it's a humongous issue. This debate is reiterated hundreds of times. Probably. Certainly tens of times. In Rishonim, in Mefarshim, you see a Chazal, you see a Medrash, and some feel that it's like the religious duty to defend it, to take it literally. And others, most famously, although not only, but most famously, the Rambam, he would ridicule the Taz. Right? The Taz is trying to say, you know, you'll forgive me, I don't mean to speak in jest, we got to be frum, we can't start playing around with Chazal, The Rambam addresses it. The Rambam knew that psychology. The Rambam specifically says the people who take the words of Chazal literally always think that they're being frum. They think that they're showing the greatest respect to Chazal to say we take every word they say literally. Says the Rambam, they're simpletons. They don't realize to ascribe to Chazal such outlandish things, you're bringing disrepair and disrepute and disrespect to Chazal. Give them more credit than that. They didn't mean some of those things. They were speaking in parables. They were speaking figuratively. You know, major heavyweights on both sides of the issue, and you can imagine, very often the stakes are very high. So this is just one example, but I think it's a good example. You met with this Chazal, and again, it's not like you got to be a super scholar to know about it. You just got to learn Rashi on Chumash. Whoa! Ho-ho! You know, it's like it's not like some of the earlier things we saw in Bereshit where we don't understand the concepts. Here we know exactly what's being talked about. And the question is simply, does Chazal mean it? Or do we have to assume that they meant it? I take it literally. And again, we see two different approaches, and then the details can be fitted. Okay, we only have a few minutes, and I did not balance time-wise the shir so well. I guess I'm rusty. We have a little bit more to go. So let me just mention to you some of the other issues that I have on this sheet. First of all, the Rashbam says something beautifully. Many of the Mefarshim say it as well. The Sforno, if you'll take a look, elaborates through the pasuk beautifully all the stages of it, but especially the same things the Rashbam and others say, which is, what's the Vizos Hapam? Etzame Atzamai, we asked that question before. It says beautifully, Vizos Hapam, this is the time, the only time, that woman will be from me. Why? Because what's the rest of human history? Not only is women not created from man, from Kvater, just the opposite. All creatures come from women. Women are the birthing creatures. Vizos Hapam, this is unique in human history, where it starts off with woman coming from man, and then the rest of history. Right, isn't that fascinating? Zos Tapam. Again, the Rashbam just said it straight, and the Sforno literally fits it in, painting by numbers, so to speak, to each part of the pasuk. Very, very beautiful. That's number one there. Next point. Let's skip that Radak for a second. Well, let me just mention, the Radak points out something that I said before, which is this somewhat imbalance between the name Adam and Chava, and Ish and Isha. That we were talking about Adam, and now we're talking about Isha. So he just makes the point that this pasuk is referring not to Chava literally, but to all women throughout history. After all, Isha ain't a shame yuchala. That's not her name. Elachava hu shema yuchala. Chava was her name. Isha is just a description not of her. Isha is a description of all womankind, which again stem from her. What does it mean when the Torah tells us? In the next pasuk, because what we were calling our Sheva Brachas pasuk, but Hayu Lebasrecha, the man and woman Adam and Chava should be one flesh. You know, very dramatic, romantic. What does it mean? So, what does Rashi say? Havlad no sar al yedei shneihem. They're obviously two independent people. This is mamash like Sheva Brachas speech. Two people independent, but they come together and they have a child and they have bonds. And it's all true, by the way. Of course, it's true. Baruch Hashem, we all know that. So what does it mean when they come together? Because they both have, literally, their DNA in the child. It's the children that make them one flesh. So take a look at the Eben Ezra. Look at the end of the Eben Ezra first. V'yesh omrim sh'olidu efa. Right? He's referring to Rashi. Some say that it means that through the child. V'hu rachok. It's ridiculous. Or if you take a look at the Ramban also rejects this Rashi. Because the Ramban says, why is that unique to humankind? Right? Animals have children too. This is something that's being described as unique to Adam and Chava, unique to all men and women. So one explanation is, it's the child, that's Rashi's, but it's worth noting that Ibn Ezra and Ramban don't like that explanation. So what are the other possible explanations? Take a look at Ibn Ezra. The first thing is, it's Kiluhain. It doesn't mean literally, they're two independent people, but they should be so close and so loving and so intimate as if they were one. Or he says, perhaps, oh, Shiidmu Ka'asher Hayu. It means in the past. Adam and Chava were one. They're created from the same DNA, literally. She's created from him. So you should try to have your marriage throughout history as if, as it was in that original primordial type or, you know, prehistorical marriage. What does the Ramban say? The Ramban gives the Sheva Brachos divorce. So it's good to know that it's not just in like the art scroll, it's a Ramban. It's a beautiful, beautiful Ramban. Says the Ramban, what does it mean? What's unique? Because after all, it's not just children. Animals procreate also. Says the difference is that there's no romance. That's basically what he says. There's no love. There's no sustained relationship. Right? The male lion will see the female. I'll take her. Zehu. But what's unique to humankind, at least when humankind are acting in an elevated way, we all know that humans can debase themselves, but what is the capacity, I guess you would say, the capacity for sustained emotional connection and romance, which is in its you know, when it's done in the proper context, is beautiful and ennobling. So that, says the Ramban, is what's unique. And that, again, it's not just a physical union. It's when you have that physical union in a context of love and romance and commitment and connection. So that can bring people together, so to speak, as a basar echad, as one thing. And now last but not least, again, it's an obvious point, but just to make it, the parak ends by telling us that Abraham are naked, and they were not embarrassed. So why weren't they embarrassed? They had been to Jacqueline, and they were on their Weight Watchers diet, and they had such good figures that they didn't have to be embarrassed. And why weren't they embarrassed? Right? I never met a woman who wasn't embarrassed about such a thing. And most men are embarrassed too, right? I'm embarrassed even in a locker room, right? Whatever. Things go on there. They think they're back in the garden in locker rooms. And I've been told it's just as bad, if not worse, in women's locker rooms. You know? But we're embarrassed, right? So why weren't they? So what does Rashi tell us? Rashi says there was no idea of Yetzer Hara yet. Even though they had knowledge, they understood what was right and wrong. Again, we'll have to get to this in the next chapter when we learn. This is major philosophical stuff. We'll still try to crack our teeth on, which is what did they understand, and then what was changed by eating from the fruit. So we'll have to make reference again to this Rashi, but Rashi says there was no idea of Tznius yet. Because there was no need for Tznius, because they didn't have Yetzer Hara. They didn't have any lust yet. The Sephorno just elaborates on that, and let's finish with the last source. He just says, similar to Rashi, but he elaborates, Ki oz how you call putloseim chol evrehem, lasos raton konim ovad. They had the same physical appearance, more or less, that we do. They have the same sexual organs. But everything was for one purpose, not for any physical or human lust. It was just because if God would have told them to do it, they would have done it. And if that's the case, if everything, you're putting on tefillin for God, or you're procreating for God, what's the difference? If that's your only singular motivation, there's nothing to be embarrassed about. But not for any physical gratification. When they had sexual relationships, it was no different than the way you or I would eat. It was just something that you do. Because that's how you have to survive. That's how you procreate. That's how you continue.
So that's really consistent with the cause when he said that it was
right.
Different.
If you apply it to the animals.
Right.
Yes, again, listen, the bottom line is, and again, it's hard to know how far to go. It's you can get yourself in trouble. It's elastic. But whatever level of understanding we have now, when Yemir Tzashem in a few weeks, when we've gone through Parak Gimel and the whole story with the snake and eventually finally leave the garden, hopefully we'll understand things better. But I will probably never fully understand this. And conversely, at this point, even without going further, we all understand on some level that there was something different going on in this garden than there was in the rest of human history. Even in the rest of the Torah, let alone from our day. What exactly it was, and it's a little bit of the dangerous Pandora's box. They just said, well, anything went there, everything was so different. You know, because on the other hand, you've seen Mepharshim ascribing very human, very emotional characteristics to them. So it's a big mystery, I admit it. But at the same time, I don't think anyone would deny that there was something unique going on there. Would you go so far as to say it was so unique, therefore, that there's nothing wrong with Adam being with animals? So some Mepharshim would say yes, and other Mepharshim would say, you know, maybe that's a little too far. You know, maybe there they weren't so different than us, and therefore it couldn't have been. But, you know, these are fascinating issues. And Baruch Shesiyamnu, we finished two prokim. 24 shirim, for anyone who's counting, this is our 24th shir, your 24th sor sheet. And Yemir Tzashem, I hope there'll be no problems. Next week we'll start with Parag Gimel. The Nachash is on the scene. I hate things. You're welcome. Good to be back.